In the year 587 BC, Jerusalem, the capital of Judah, was captured by King Nebuchadnezzar of the Babylonian Empire. Many of the citizens of Jerusalem and Judah were forcibly taken back to Babylon in a traumatic event known as the exile. Some viewed this as an act of God, as judgment over a sinful people. One of those taken into exile was a priest named Ezekiel. And in exile, in Babylon, away from his home, Ezekiel became a powerful voice for God. And in time, his status was raised from priest to prophet. Ezekiel was a colorful character. When he spoke, sometimes he would just fall over. Sometimes he would travel long distances completely in a trance. He saw strange things. He proclaimed dangerous messages. According to some Jewish traditions, the book of Ezekiel was to be read only by those who were over the age of 30. The book of Ezekiel is complex. It is filled with prophecies of judgment, oracles against foreign nations, and long discussions of God's restoration of Judah. The book closes with 9 whole chapters of this detailed vision of the new temple as imagined by Ezekiel. The first half of the book largely consists of prophecies of judgments against Judah and Jerusalem and those who are taken into exile. However, not all the book of Ezekiel is about judgment and condemnation. There is also to be found in its pages a message of hope. Ezekiel has witnessed the destruction of Jerusalem. He's experienced the exile firsthand. But in the face of this, he proclaims the promise of restoration, the promise that God would return the people back to Jerusalem. Our reading today offers such a message of hope. Ezekiel compares the people of Jerusalem to a flock of sheep. And as a flock, they are clearly lost, and they are quite literally scattered across the world. The good news is that God claims these lost sheep to become their shepherd. God says, I will seek out my sheep. I will rescue them from the places to which they have been scattered. I will bring them to their own land. I will feed them on the mountains of Israel. I will feed them with good pasture. I myself will be the shepherd of my sheep. I will seek the lost. I will bring back the strayed. I will bind up the injured. I will strengthen the weak. This is the promise that God makes through Ezekiel to be the shepherd of the lost and the broken, to feed and protect them, to guide them. But that is not all, because God also will rain down judgment on those sheep who have mistreated or persecuted the other sheep. Ezekiel differentiates between what he calls the fat sheep and the lean sheep. The fat sheep are those who have grown strong, who have used their power to push and to butt and to scatter the weak. They have failed utterly to use their power to help those who are among the least of these. These are the sheep that God will judge. The lean sheep are the ones at the bottom of the power food chain. They are the lost, the hungry, the thirsty, the sick, the imprisoned. They are the ones misused and mistreated. God promises to save this flock, to no longer allow it to be ravaged by outside or internal forces. God will establish one shepherd over the flock as king. As we read in verse 23 and 24, God says, I will set up over them one shepherd, my servant David, and he shall feed them. He shall feed them and be their shepherd, and I, the Lord, will be their God. And my servant David shall be a prince among them. I, the Lord, have spoken. And this is the prophecy of hope brought by Ezekiel, that a people who are lost, who are broken, who are scattered, will have a king. They will be watched over and cared for. They will be protected and they will be fed. Today is a day in the church that we know as Christ the King Sunday. Different cultures have different calendars, different ways to mark the passage through the year. The Chinese have their calendar. This is the year of the rooster. Jews have a calendar which is lunar-based. During the French Revolution in the late 1700s, the French government implemented what is known as the French Republican calendar, and it had weeks that were 10 days long instead of 7. And the idea here was to remove all religious or royalist influences from the calendar. And the French used this calendar for about 12 years. The ancient Mayans had a calendar, but it said that we would all be wiped out in the year 2012, 5 years ago, so I guess not. The church even has its own calendar, and today happens to be the final Sunday of the church year. Next Sunday marks the beginning of a new liturgical year with the start of Advent. The season of Advent is 4 weeks long, and it culminates with Christmas. And from Christmas, we go to Lent and Easter, Pentecost, and then back around to Christ the King. In our church, we like to talk about our lives as being spiritual journeys. And this liturgical calendar takes us on a liturgical journey that is 12 months long. And it is a journey that we repeat over and over again every year. And when we imagine our lives as a journey like this, then we naturally imagine a starting and an ending point. And our starting point would normally be our birth, and the ending point would be our death. We like to think of our journey as always moving onward and upward, like we're climbing a mountain. And we would hope that our journey would take us closer and closer to God. If we consider the liturgical calendar as such a journey that we follow each year, then we run into a problem. Because when you reach Christ the King Sunday, the end of the year, does that put you at the top of the mountain? And if so, where do you go from there? How do you get down to start at Advent? Do you just jump off the side of the mountain? I mean, we do like to end the year with a bang, but not a splat. It helps to think of the liturgical calendar not as being a journey from point A to point B, but as a circle, which it is. Or maybe a track that runners are running around. And each time we go around the track changes because we change. We're made different simply by taking the journey. I'll have a birthday this year, had a birthday last year, but I'll be a little different this year than I was last year. And each year when we celebrate Christmas or Easter or Christ the King, we do so differently because we have been changed by our spiritual journey. When we hear the title, Christ the King, and realize that it is the final Sunday on the church's calendar, well, our impulse would be to what? Celebrate. The one, because we've done it. We are triumphant, aren't we? We've made it to this point. The one whose birth that we will celebrate soon, he is king. He is victorious. We are victorious. The season is over, and we've won. We've won the Super Bowl, the World Series, the SEC Championship, unless you're Alabama. So raise up your glass of champagne, light the Roman candle, celebrate. It's time to to celebrate. If we arrive at that point of celebration, then it is like we've reached the top of the mountain. So how do we make that transition from the high of the victory back to the humble birth of a child? How do we return to the beginning of the year? The problem with this scenario, as I've set it up, is power, or at least our understanding of power. And the power of Jesus the King, the conqueror, the victor, is not the power of control, but that is a power of compassion, of love. And power should make every Christian uneasy, because that's not what our faith is about. To be a Christian is not about amassing power or controlling power or using power. Being a Christian is about something else entirely. It is about submitting to power. Today's sermon is the second in this series that I'm calling Focused on Faith. As we get nearer to Christmas and our celebration that God truly is among us, we need to ask ourselves how we are going to prepare. How do we get ready for the coming of the Lord? And the answer to this is that we focus on our faith. We don't focus on our works or our wealth or our power, but on our faith. That is how we prepare to meet the Lord. And we will be exploring this over the next few weeks. On this day that we celebrate Christ as King, let us recall that he is not a king of armies, but of sheep, and lost sheep at that. He is king, but he died for us on a cross. He was hungry, he was thirsty, naked, and abandoned. Jesus calls his followers to care, not to conquer, to love, not to manipulate, to deliver, not destroy. His soldiers are armed only with compassion. So today, as we celebrate Christ the King, let us take a moment and remember what kind of king Jesus is. He is a poor king, born in a stable. He talks about a kingdom of heaven, not a kingdom on earth. He does not inhabit a palace, but he walks across the countryside, preaching to the crowds. He has no army, just disciples. His crown is not gold, but thorns. He doesn't hobnob with the nobility, but he embraces the sick and the hungry, the thirsty, the homeless, the imprisoned. He is a king for all. This day of Christ the King is a transition into Advent and to Christmas. We circle the year being challenged and changed at every revolution. But when we arrive back at Christ the King, we may find ourselves at the top of that mountain. But we don't have to climb down to Advent. We don't have to jump off the side of the mountain. Because when we get to this point, we will discover that Advent has been raised to our level, waiting for us to start again, and this time just a little bit closer to God. Amen.